Good morning to you. Well, it's good morning here. Anyway, it's 9:30 in Salford in Greater Manchester. And it's a nice Wednesday morning. It's pretty mild. As it goes, it's mild and fairly dry, and that's a good thing. Hi to Chad Palmer, who's in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm amused often. I'm often amused by those who get up early. I mean, I don't think necessarily you get up early for the BBG. I think you're probably up early anyway, and you decide to watch this. So it's a nice thing, because depending on where you are, it's like 3:30 in the morning Central Time, isn't it? And 4:30 Eastern Time there. So it's very early. So if you happen to be up and about doing your job or whatever it is, and you've switched this on, it's a small world. It really is. I might tell you a story one time when I've got a gap to fill on the Richie Allen radio show about my experience of just how small this world really is. I had an extraordinary experience many years ago when I was a tour guide at the Waterford Crystal plant in Kilbarry in Waterford City. Waterford Crystal, of course, one of the great Irish success stories, not these days, sadly, but of yesteryear. And in my summer holidays, as a student, I used to work there and escort mostly American tourists around the factory and show them the process of manufacturing crystal from the blowing of the glass blowing to the cutting of it, glass cutting using diamond wheels, and then on to the specific stuff, the specialised stuff like engraved crystal, all the sports stuff for the ATP tennis and the golf, the PGA and all of that. And I had an amazing experience. I won't tell you now. I know you're probably saying, why don't you tell us now? Hi to John Rorty. John makes a good point there. John is he's one of my three gay friends. You gotta have one or two. I have three. In fact, I have more than three. John, good morning. Thanks for your comment, mate. It's fairly insightful. I'm not following the Democratic debates for a couple of reasons. They're on in the small hours of the morning and I'm in bed. And I suppose I'll come off as a bit of a hypocrite now, because I do follow what happens here, you know, in terms of politics here in the UK. But it matters not really who sits on the throne. What matters is how they are financed and by whom, of course, more than anything. But John makes a good point. He says, I watched the Democratic debates here in the States last night, televised on CNN. Amazing how all are backing the climate change cult agenda with fervour. Several are extremists. None question it. It's a very good point. None will question it. And one of the reasons that none will question it, you've only got to look really for one reason, is Sky News. Now, Sky News has led the climate change agenda, has pushed it, and has campaigned on it, what they call campaigning journalism, which is an oxymoron. Journalists shouldn't campaign for anything. A journalist's job is to report what he or she sees and hears and verify it, okay? And find out as much as he or she can about that subject, and then put that information in front of the reader or the listener or the viewer, and then let him or her make their minds up. That's journalism. Campaigning journalism is a nonsense. But Sky have done a lot. You know, plastic in the oceans. Sky News has got its own climate change segment of its website. So much so that politicians are now thanking Sky News during appearances on Sky News. In fact, we had such an incident this morning. The health secretary on Sky News was not just the health secretary, but other politicians, thanking Sky for leading the fight against climate change. Sky News is supposed to be a news organisation. It's supposed to report the news and challenge what is said by politicians, academics, whatever. So it's a good observation, John. You won't get anybody in politics standing up to it, because, well, it's suicide. It's career suicide for any politician to say, hang on a second, the science doesn't stack up here. You know, the claims that we are at the point of, you know, collapsed civilizations. We're at the point of no return, that the earth will be uninhabitable in a couple of decades time. There's no evidence to support any of this. You know, that's suicide for a politician. Again, because the media now is pushing it harder than even corporations, and, you know, even harder. The media pushes it harder even than the extremists themselves. Okay. Let's have a look at the front pages then. Thanks for watching this nonsense. I appreciate it. It's good to be with you. It always is. Madhouse here at the moment with the young dog. It's a madhouse. Absolute madhouse. We knew. But then you never really do know. You know, you have dogs and then they grow up and you forget what they were like when they were very, very, very young. It made one or two people smile yesterday when I referred to our new addition as a terrorist. But that's what she is. That's her barking downstairs now because I'm not down there with her. Jesus Christ. The Sun, I'm Megan, my escape. I'm Megan, my escape. I'm making my mistake. I was a bit slow on the uptake there at The Sun's pun. I'm Megan, my mistake. Escape, I made a mistake. That's a Freudian slip. I'm Megan, my escape. She's in Vancouver, apparently. Now, sadly, there's very little in the papers today. Very slim pickings for me today, the papers. This won't take as long as it ordinarily does, this chat between you and me, because there's not a lot in the papers today. The Telegraph, Meghan's father said to testify against her. That's because she's taken the Daily Mail to court, because the Daily Mail published a section of a letter she wrote to her father, Thomas Markle, and she reckons it's a gross invasion of her privacy. She claims that the Mail were very selective in terms of the bits of the letter they published, you know, to make it reflect negatively on her. So it's a court case. There will be a court case. And the Telegraph is suggesting that he might have to come over and testify. Of course, he won't be compelled to. Not in a civil case, of course. Right, that's the Telegraph. The Mail itself, Markle versus Markle. Well, it's actually Markle versus the Mail. Her father said to be star witness against her in High Court Showdown. Devastating texts expose their bitter war of words over the wedding. So the Mail is hardly cowed here by the threat of losing a High Court battle with Meghan Markle. It continues to publish intimate details about her relationship with her father, including snippets of text messages. Yeah, that's in the Daily Mail today. The Times. Johnson to take lead in fight against crime gangs. Now, I haven't read this particular story, but there were a couple of former gang members on BBC and Sky television this morning talking about what Boris Johnson could do to deal with knife gangs. It's an epidemic, isn't it, in London, more than any other city, London. Men being stabbed with knives and killed. I'm not going to get into that. I might be done about it, because I don't know, really. That's the Times. County lines, drug gangs and all of that sort of stuff. A lot of money in drugs, you see. It's an extraordinary story coming out of Ireland this morning, isn't there? For my Irish viewers. About a man being found dismembered. Eerily. Similar to the sorts of executions that you would normally associate with Latin America, South America, the narcos. Extraordinary stuff. A man's been found arms and legs dismembered in Dublin. Jesus Christ, huh? Did I do The Guardian, did I? No. Britain failed to alert EU about 75,000 criminals. There's not a lot of Brexit talk. It seems that the Conservative Party supporting newspapers are fairly thrilled at the prospect of the UK leaving the European Union in 16 days' time. And the left, or supposed left, newspapers are depressed that there's seemingly nothing they can do about that, so it's all gone a bit quiet. Except for this story in The Guardian today that claims that the UK failed to alert the European Union about criminals leaving this country and crisscrossing Europe. Criminals of varying degrees now, it must be said. Right? Right. It's absolute mayhem downstairs with the youngster. She's kind of fenced in at the moment, so she can't do too much damage. We've got a little compound for her. She's not in it very often, only when I'm not in the room, because she'll just tear the place asunder, won't she? It's what they do. That's what puppies are born to do, destroy places. The iPaper, British Nature set to pay the price for HS2. Now, I've heard a bit of this morning. Activists have been talking to UK radio programmes about how HS2 is going to destroy ancient woodlands in the country. How ancient woodlands are going to be cleared to pave the way for a high-speed railway in this country. So the Independent is taking that on board today. It's taking that on today, that issue. I don't know if we'll get into it later on the radio show. We might do. The Express newspaper today, Big Ben must bong for Brexit. Bit of a row. Conservative Party Marc Francois, MP, wants the Big Ben to chime in celebration when the UK leaves the European Union. Remainers are not happy about it. And it really does feel a little bit like the silly season. Now, you know, Parliament is in session. The children are back in school. In my days producing commercial radio and presenting it, this was a pretty busy time. There were lots of things to talk about, lots going on. But it feels a bit like the silly season at the moment. And these are the silly stories that are getting a lot of attention. This was the topic on LBC and on Talk Radio and on Radio 5 Live yesterday. Should Big Ben chime out in triumph as we leave the European Union? We're not leaving the European Union, by the way. And like I said, the Conservative Party supporting press is giving Boris Johnson an easy ride on this, because the withdrawal bill that has passed through Parliament isn't obviously leaving the European Union. Okay? There's still a trade agreement and a post Brexit relationship to be agreed and negotiated with the European Union. And in that, I believe that Boris Johnson will basically give the European Union whatever it wants. And I know this. It's already happening. Talked about it. So we're not really leaving. Not in any real terms, anyway. So that's the Daily Express today. The Metro. Trophy hunter quits Love Island. Love Island is a nonsense, obviously. Somebody has left it, and it's being alleged that he left because photographs emerged of him posing with dead animals. Yeah. I won't opine or wax lyrical about trophy hunting. You're a psychopath if you take a gun, a high-powered rifle, and go out and hunt animals that have no idea they're being hunted and kill them for sport and then pose with their bodies. You're a fucking sicko, really. No more needs to be said on that, I wouldn't have thought. The Daily Mirror, cruel animal trade ended now. Liam Gallagher, or Gallagher, as they say in Manchester. And David Jason. There you are. You don't often see David Jason and Liam Gallagher picture together. Only Fools and Horses, of course. Open All Hours. Frost. Very, 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 very good actor, David Jason. And there he is with Liam Gallagher. The Mirror is campaigning to end trophy hunting. Again, the Mirror shouldn't be campaigning to do anything. It's supposed to be a newspaper. It can report on the horrors of trophy hunting, but it's not supposed to campaign. I don't care how sexy the topic is. It's their job to be impartial and to be objective. But of course they're not. Here's the Sun, 121 miles per hour. Brendan is not gone, apparently. We're going to get more Brendan. I don't know where the photograph is. And Brian Blessed believes that he's gorgeous. Pretty good actor as well, Brian Blessed. Gordon's alive! That's him. He'll never get away from that, will he? That fucker downstairs is just causing carnage. And poor Jazz is stuck down there with her. What are you going to do? Can't bring her up here because there are wires in the studio. She'll tear the studio apart. Financial Times, Europe 3 edge closer to ditching Iran nuclear accord. Right. This is Germany, France, the UK. Which at the behest of the Zionist state of Israel wants to tear up the Iran nuclear deal. Anyway, we'll move on and we'll have a look at one or two of the stories inside the papers. Hang on a sec. Alrighty. Good morning, by the way, to those of you chatting away on the chat. How you doing? Good to be with you. And thanks for your comments. Marvellous. Millie Miles is asking, has anybody else heard that Max Egan was arrested for suggesting establishment involvement in the fires in Australia? I certainly haven't heard that. And I wouldn't imagine that is true, to be honest. Hi to TH Coolsard. Good morning, Richie. Re-spraying trails a couple of weeks ago following the fires in Australia, where I used to live. Channel 7 weather report in Queensland talked about chaff showing up on the radar. Cheers, mate. Thanks for that. Really appreciate that. Hi to Patricia. Hi to Charlotte. And to Russian Bot, to Manzi, to Jason Hurley. Jean-Anne Crowley says the Mail are having a blast, re-Megan. How you doing, Jean-Anne? They are. It's an interesting one, really. Those of us that have worked in the media for years, these are interesting stories for us, you know, for obvious reasons. Anything to do with publishing, anything to do with privacy is of great importance to journalists, and obviously it's of great interest to those of us who share information, whether it's online or in our radio programmes. Here's the story as covered by the BBC. The Mail on Sunday has defended publishing Meghan's letter to her father. You might say, Richie, what the fuck is this? This is of no interest to us. It kind of is, really. However bad, you know, the UK press is, however poor it is, however much it fails in its duty to inform the public, however much it fails in its duty to hold authority to account, it's still the only fucking press we have, you know? And as bad as it is, I'm not going to defend it though, we have to pay attention when its own freedom is coming under threat, its freedom to publish, something that it feels is in the public interest. I couldn't give a shit about the royal family, apart from its links to paedophilia, the parent group for the Mail, because they published a letter that she sent to her father back in 2018. She might be more annoyed with her father, you would have thought. She claims that they misused her private information. They selectively edited the letter. Now, she might have a case there, because that's what journalists do. If you want to portray somebody in a particularly negative light, and you've got letters they've written, they might be 3 or 4 pages long, you're going to select parts of segments of the letter that support your case that she's a bit of a horrible diva. So she's alleging that, and she alleges breach of copyright, and she is using evidence, or her legal team will use evidence from her father. Evidence from her dad will form part of the newspaper will use evidence possibly from her dad as part of their defense. Yes, don't let me confuse you. That's in the BBC today. It's everywhere today, that story, actually. Yeah, the BBC Royal correspondent is somebody called Johnny Diamond. And he says it's a robust response from the Mail on Sunday. A court document that members of the royal family, including Meghan, the Mail says, rely on publicity about themselves and their lives in order to maintain their privileged positions and to promote themselves. The Mail on Sunday says she doesn't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, that the contents of the letter were private and would remain so. Now, that is a thorny legal issue. She might be well within her rights to say, if I write a letter to my father, I have reasonable grounds to expect that any communication I send to my father won't end up in the pages of a national newspaper. See, it's a thorny legal issue, this. And it'll be interesting to see this play out in the High Court when it eventually does. So that's the story anyway. Would I publish it? I don't know, is the answer. I couldn't tell you. I'd have to be there. I don't know. I'm not interested in the royal family. Again, outside of specifically talking about things that impact us, child abuse, the finances of the family, their historic ties to, you know what I'm talking about, and so on. Right. We talked about Birmingham banning private cars. Private cars, that's me and you, from entering the city for climate change reasons. This made me laugh in The Guardian. Gabby Hinsliff, driving into a city should become as antisocial as smoking. A very woke of Gabby. That's in The Guardian today. You're just going to get more and more and more of this, you know. Things you can't do, or you shouldn't do, or you must not do to protect the climate, because the climate is vulnerable. The climate is just another vulnerable group. We got to avoid hurting it or harming it. Anyway, this made me laugh too. In the same newspaper, a 25 degree Celsius wash is greenest, but can it really clean filthy clothes? No, it fucking can't, is the answer. No. And don't look at me like that. I do use a washing machine. Of course I do. Christ, I'm an independent man. Do you think the future Mrs. Allen is some sort of housewife? I fucking wish she was. I wish I could just throw my underpants around the house and leave it there for her to pick up and put in the machine. No. I do my own washing. And when I can't do it, when the weather is horrendous and I can't dry it, I take it to the laundrette. Oh yeah. Modern man. Christ. Oh yeah. Where's this washing machine story to piss on? Here it is. This is the University of Leeds. Researchers. This is where government grants go to. This is where private funding to programs at universities. This is where the money goes. Crazy shit like this. They've spent years washing clothes. Standing around. In front of washing machines. Men and women in white coats. Standing around in front of washing machines like this. All in the name of protecting the climate. Clothes washed at 25 degrees on a 30 minute cycle shed fewer microfibers into wastewater and keep their colour for longer. This makes sense. And it's good for the environment. And Lucy Cotton, Leeds University, the report's lead author, she's loving it. And says, you know, this is where it's all going to go. Now, don't laugh. But this is what the Internet of Things and the advent of smart... I think Jazz has just told Leia to just shut the fuck up downstairs. Mayhem, I'm going to have this for about 2 months until she calms down. Anyway, where was I? Yeah, this is how it's going to work, you see. Smart devices that are communicating to the hub or to the cloud. Right? Don't laugh. And as the climate hysteria accelerates, and it will accelerate, the hysterical claims being made, like yesterday. That was some claim about the oceans yesterday. The oceans have warmed in the last few years, as if we took the heat from 3.6 billion Hiroshima atomic bombs and put it into the ocean. Of course, nobody challenges any of this bullshit, you know. So in the near future, everything you do in your home will be measured, or its impact on the climate will be measured through smart devices. And there will be a penalty to pay for those of you who don't wash your clothes at 25 degrees Celsius for 30 minutes. And that is not crazy. That's not the crazy outpourings of a very vivid imagination. That's where we're going. There you are. You try and wash your clothes. You go out with your dog to your local park and meet other dogs. You walk out, you've got a nice pair of jeans on. You know, you've got a white pair of trainers. They might be a bit tatty. You know, you've got a jacket on you. You come back and you're fucking destroyed, you know. You've got the paw prints of about 25 different dogs on your clothes. They walk into black muck. They cover you in shit. You put your clothes into the machine at 25 degrees for a half an hour. Good luck with it. So this is where it's going. Seemingly a throwaway story. No. In the future, your devices at home will be hanging you out to dry, no pun intended. Your smart fridge. Your smart cooker. Everything. It's mad. I'm 45. I almost wish I was 75. And then I could be, I mean, I might not live to be 50. Who knows? None of us. You know, time is promised to no man or woman. I could go tomorrow. I could go today. We don't know. But I almost wish I was 75 on the, you know, on the basis of probability that I wouldn't have to live through what's coming. Because no dystopian science fiction film has gotten anywhere near how bad it's going to be in the future. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Can't drive here, you can't drive there. You must not use your car at these times. You cannot fly so many times. You can't take the ferry. Ferries have got to go as well. Big diesel guzzlers. It's crazy. But it's coming down the line. The fires in Australia, which of course are not being reported on properly or fairly or, let me say it right. The mass media, and particularly the media in Australia, is not interested in reporting on the reasons the fires began in the first place, which we've gotten into on the radio programme. They're also not interested in finding out why cloud seeding hasn't been tried in order to make the areas where the fires are ravaging the worst, where they are burning the most intensely. Why don't we use cloud seeding? They don't want to talk about these things, and they don't want to talk about the unusual nature of these fires. Interesting story in the Mail today. The Australian Open, which is a Grand Slam tennis event, one of four Grand Slam events, of course, the others being in New York, in London and in Paris, might be in danger. And there's a report there that in satellite events, warm-up events, players have been suffering respiratory problems because of the thick air, of course, the smoke and all of that. Crazy. But yes, the media is not really focusing on why the fires have burned so intensely, how they came to be started, and what, if anything, is fueling them. They don't want to know. Of course they don't. The newspapers just want to say, it's climate change, damn it. Which is preposterous, because carbon dioxide has got fuck all to do with those fires. Nothing. It's mayhem downstairs. Pub banter, having a crack at work, gently ribbing, gently prodding somebody, having a bit of fun. Those days are over. We're back to the Mail again. Those days are over, because microaggressions. And because, well, thick air. Air, Jason Hurley thinks thick air is funny. Air that is impregnated with smog, with soot, with smoke, is what I meant, Jason. You bastard. Right. I don't know what I'm fucking doing here. Hang on. Oh! He's got some vice, God love him. He's got some vice. You should hear me sing in the bath. I've not been able to fit into a bath since I was about 9. I'd love to know what it's like to have a bath. I can't fit in one. At least not any regular bath that you'd find in any bog standard house. Where the fuck was I? Oh yeah. Banter. Workplace. Pub banter and jokes with colleagues can amount to sexual harassment, even if unintended. Told you, context. No longer. Eventually, context will disappear from the Oxford Concise English Dictionary. Context. Doesn't matter. Unintended. Something that you said to a pal at work. And there's no intention to sexually harass anybody or to cause anybody any discomfort. But if somebody does, well, feel discomfort. You could be in serious trouble. But it's even worse than that. It's even worse than that. I hope I explained this properly. Cause I'm a bit fatigued this morning. I'm getting up with the dog so that she can go to the toilet during the night. These are the joys of puppyhood. Puppyhood. These are the joys of puppetry. Got to get up and leave her out because they wee a bit more regularly than bigger dogs. Thank God I'm not drinking because it would be a difficult thing to do. I'm trying to explain this. The worst part of this is somebody at work could overhear you. Right, I'm at work with you, me and you. You say something to me, there's no intention to cause any sexual harassment whatsoever. You're just having a chat with me. Person C might hear it. Person C might not be offended by it or put out by it, but person C might think person D over there wouldn't like that. The person D is 150 fucking meters away. Person C wasn't offended, but person D might be. You got a problem. You got a problem. HR needs to be called. We need to fucking sort you out. Either a re-education class or you could be fired. Do you know why I'm able to laugh? Because I don't have to put up with it. You see, it's easy for me to laugh. Mrs. Hilsenrath. Who the fuck is Mrs. Hilsenrath? It sounds like she was a guard at Auschwitz. Mrs. Hilsenrath. This is Rebecca Hilsenrath, who chairs the Equality and Human Rights Commission. Sounds like she was a fucking guard in a watchtower at Auschwitz, doesn't she? She says unwanted jokes and even facial expressions can amount to unacceptable behaviour. Even if it's not how it was intended. Facial expressions. You've got no chance. You've got no chance. Richie, we've called you in. What did you call me in for? I've got work to do. Richie, we called you in because Mary says you gave her a bit of a strange look. Did she? When was this? Yesterday, Richie, about 9:05. I can't fucking remember what I did 10 minutes ago. What are you talking about? Is there CCTV? No, she says that you looked at her funnily. It was after she said something about her boyfriend. Or it was after she said something about what she was doing for her holidays. You gave her a strange look, Richie. She felt very uncomfortable. Did she? Did I say anything? No, she says you just looked at her. Richie, we'd ask you just not to look at Mary for a while. We're all going to be like that. You're going to see people walking around like Munch's Scream. People are just going to be walking around right? Silent scream. Fucking planet we're living on here, huh? Mary was a bit concerned, Richie, about the facial expression that you had on your face between 9.05 and 9.06 yesterday. She was a bit uncomfortable around you. Yep. Reconnection successful, it tells me. I think I just lost you for a minute there. Fucking hell. Right, we're back on, Annie. Well, let's have a look at my GoPro footage and let's see what's made. Well, the GoPro footage won't show my facial expression to Mary. Anyway, fucking hell. Fucking dog. Can you hear her? Just won't stop. Brilliant. Oh, God. Right, I've only got 3 minutes left. I'm going to rush through these. This is in The Guardian. You can read this for free. Lunatic asylum we live in. This guy writing for The Guardian. Rick is his name. Spelt with a H. Very exotic. Rick. 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 Is that offensive now? Is that racist? Rick. Rick. And he says, can a virtual reality app save me from digital overload? Yes, he's aware of the oxymoronic question himself. You know, bit silly. Bit of a contradiction. Can I use an app to save me from digital overload? Rick has put a VR headset on, connected his phone to it, and it has transported him to blissful worlds to help him to escape from the madness of the digital world. Mm. Oh, yeah. It's all there. Go to theguardian.com. Read it for free. It's unfucking believable. This is what's coming down the line. Right? Everywhere you go. Tech, 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 tech. Implants, implants, implants. Jean-Anne was emailing me this morning, Jean-Anne. In from Cleggan there, which survived Storm Brendan just about. Thanks, Jean-Anne. Talking about this yesterday. Microaggressions, Sheffield University. This is very good. It's in the Spectator. Beware the university campus microaggression monitors. Oh, beware them indeed. But like I said, this has left campus now. This is in companies. Like, whatever her name is, Elson fucking Rath. Mrs. Ilson Rath. Fucking Ilsa Koch, more like it. Or Koch, whatever the fuck. Here we go. Are you a student? Are you willing to work for 9.34 per hour? The university is hiring 20 students, I covered this yesterday, to challenge offensive language on campus. They're going to tackle racial microaggressions. New recruits will help students understand racism. Because we're all stupid. Because we don't know what racism is. Okay? And, goes on, it's very good this. Thanks again, Jean-Anne. The central idea to microaggressions is that unthoughtful comments and questions can make minority students feel uncomfortable. Unthoughtful questions. Classic examples cited are asking someone from an ethnic minority background where they're really from, or asking a person if you can touch their hair. Do people do that? Do black people have to put up with that shit? People asking to touch their hair. Jesus Christ. Such cringy behaviour is irritating, but elevating minor slights to a serious form of oppression is deeply patronising. Yes, it is. It's as if campus authorities think minority students are incapable of dealing with the odd numpty. And that is the brilliant point made in the article by Tom Slater in The Spectator. Brilliant. You are incapable of coping with the horrors of being confronted by a numpty. Therefore, we'll step in and protect you. I've said this 1,000 times. Black people, Asian people, gay and lesbian men and women, transgender folks, don't be anybody's fucking victim. Don't be a victim. Don't become a ward of the state. Don't, you know, don't go so far up your own fucking arse. In self-love, in narcissism. Don't wrap yourself so tightly to your identity that you're incapable of dealing with some arsehole who says, can I touch your hair? It looks a bit weird. Fuck off, dickhead. That's it. Game over, right? Right. Yeah. Policing microaggressions, says Slater, is about more than policing interactions. It's about policing certain ideas, even legitimate ones. Yes, it is. Of course. 11 minutes past 10. Crazy. That's it for me. Got to go downstairs and clean up the fucking carnage, I think. There are one or two more things, but look, we'll talk again at 5 o'clock on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live on the usual channels. Thanks for your live chat comments. I really appreciate them. And thanks for watching this nonsense. I will see you at 5. Until then, bye. Bye now.